The Biden administration has proposed no less than 72 initiatives in a single executive order, the one on competition. Now, that order earlier this month is ostensibly to benefit consumers. But if you read down far enough into the order, about two-thirds of the way down, there's lots there about federal contractors. And for some analysis, we turn to the president and CEO of the Professional Services Council, David Berteau. David, I think you came up with the count of 72 things to do under this order. Where do contractors come in here?
Well, contractors, of course, can be affected by a number of the elements of this. No compete clauses, teaming agreement, competition arrangements. And perhaps the biggest is the overall fundamental approach that, you know, more smaller businesses is better than consolidated businesses to move forward. The problem is that we can't really respond to the elements of the executive order until we see the draft regulations that will be promulgated as a result of this. And the timetable is both multivariant and many different agencies involved in this. In fact, I asked one of the agencies how they were prioritizing the input because, you know, this is Executive Order 14036 and PSC has been tracking them and trying to keep a balance, a score sheet of who has to do what at the agency level. And frankly, I asked them how they're prioritizing and said, well, we're working on that. And so it is a question of we can't respond until we see what the proposed rules are. The executive order itself doesn't give enough precision on that.
You looked somewhere down here in subparagraph B of something, section 8, paragraph Q. I mean, it's unbelievable, the nested outline form in here. But it says, acting through the director of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, consider, this is the Secretary of Commerce, initiating a rulemaking to require agencies to report to NIST annually their contractors' utilization activities, blah, 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 on something to do with drugs and interchangeable biomedical products. That's just one area of contracting. But that gives them a year to come up with that rulemaking. So, like you say, this is a very drawn out process.
It does. And part of the challenge is that there's a burden in reporting for every rulemaking process. And while OMB technically calculates the impact of that burden on the community, my experience is they often undersell the real burden. They assume you can get the paperwork done in 38 minutes, whereas in reality, it takes a lot more than that. Particularly if it's not any data that you need to run your business. It's just data that you collect for the government alone. Unfortunately, you know, we have no input into that until it's done. There's another piece here. There are a number of agencies that are where it's recommended that they undertake activities here, the FCC, the Federal Trade Commission, and so on. And from PSC's point of view, we know that those are technically independent agencies and the president can't direct them what to do. But it does appear that the agencies will be promulgating it. This complicates our ability to reflect what our members want to have as part of that input as well.
And they're also looking at the defense industrial base because the Secretary of Defense has the job of reporting to the White House Competition Council, a new council created under this order, on the level of competition in the defense industrial base. And so that's imagine the reporting that will engender.
And you look, Tom, at some of the things where we've got challenges. You know, the Made in America executive order from back in January is being implemented now, and you've got a person in charge of that in the White House staff. We've got the challenges of responding to China on everything from 5G to artificial intelligence. And the White House will even say publicly, you know, we need companies that have the ability to go head to head and compete against essentially government-backed companies on the Chinese side. Well, you don't get there by breaking people up. You don't get there by minimizing the competence and capability within your companies. And so there's some competing objectives here. PSC, on behalf of our members, is going to try to help sort this out.
Well, that's what happens when you have academics and thinkers write all of this stuff and nobody's ever operated a business before. And maybe that's part of the problem.
It really is important to focus on implementation, not just on idea.
We're speaking with David Berteau, president and CEO of the Professional Services Council. And closer to ground level, speaking of contractor competition, there is the seeming dissolution of the CIOSP4 from NIH. That big GWAC just seems to get further and further from whatever momentum it had in being awarded.
Right. Well, PSC last week sent our latest letter to the acquisition leadership, both at NIH and at HHS, and shortly after we sent that letter, Amendment 8 was issued. Now, this is an RFP, the so-called final RFP. It's been out 8 weeks, and it's already had 8 amendments. And the amendments completely changed both the requirements and the direction that potential bidders have to go in without giving them enough time to do it. We've called for NITAC, the sub-agency within NIH that runs this process, to essentially suspend the process, issue a consolidated RFP that's internally consistent, that responds to the issues that bidders have raised, and give people 30 days to put their bids together, not another 8 days as Amendment 8 did, unless you count weekends, of course, which the government thinks you should be working all the time if you're bidding.
Yeah, so this could really stretch deep into the fall if they take this to heart and maybe start
it
over.
It could, and you know, we've heard from many of our members at PSC that this raises questions in their mind as to whether, A, they can submit a compliant bid, and B, whether it's worth it. Because you can actually reduce competition quite effectively if you make it too hard to bid. And that, I hope, is not what the government's intention is. It's certainly not what's in the government's interest.
No, because CIOSP3 has been a successful GWAC with lots of contractors and billions in dollars in orders. So they do know how to run these things.
It has been. And of course, you know, the one of the major focus points of the new one is healthcare technology and information systems, which if the last year and a half has shown us anything, we've got a crying need to take maximum advantage of what technical capability exists in the private sector and bring it to bear for the government. And that's what PSC is going to be pushing for here.
And briefly, we are starting to get some clues from the Armed Services Committees that they are plussing up, surprisingly, I guess, at least on the Senate side, the Biden administration's requests for DOD accounts in the coming year, in 2022.
Well, if you go back to May, you'll see in the president's budget request, I think it was May 27th, had a very minimal increase for defense, not quite enough to cover inflation. Certainly not the inflation we're seeing in recent weeks here, but a 16% increase for civilian agencies. What the House has done at the Appropriations Subcommittee level is mark up roughly consistent with the distribution of that president's budget request. What the Senate Armed Services Committee did last week in their markup is they said, nope, we're not going to do that on the defense side. We're going to add another $25 billion. Now, that's about 2.5 or 3% over and above what the administration requested. What we don't have, though, is an overall agreement either within the Senate or between the Senate and the House over what the spending levels will be, both for defense and non-defense agencies. It's almost the 1st of August. We need to get that agreement because otherwise you can't get bills out the door. And October 1st, the start of the fiscal year, is only 2 months away. And of course, the reset of the debt ceiling is only a week away. It's actually August 1st. And this is typically the budget deal and the debt ceiling deal are part of the same package. The conversation we're hearing is that the debt ceiling deal will just be part of the continuing resolution. So once again, we'll start the fiscal year with uncertainty, with no new starts, with a series of continuing resolutions. It's really time for Congress to get their act together and legislate his. The SASCs, the Senate Armed Services Committee's first salvo, though, says we're looking at increasing defense. And so we're paying close attention to that.
Well, Mama said there'd be days like this. She just didn't say every day would be like this. David Berteau is president and CEO of the Professional Services Council. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom. You're welcome.
We'll post this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Hear the Federal Drive on your schedule. Subscribe at Podcast One or wherever you get your shows.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I am your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Vice Admiral Cutler Dawson. Cutler has had an incredible career serving our country for 35 years in the Navy, where he attained the rank of Vice Admiral. And during his service, he had numerous assignments afloat and ashore, including Commander, Second Fleet, Striking Fleet Atlantic, and in Washington at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill, where he was the Navy's Chief of Legislative Affairs. Immediately following his retirement from active duty in 2004, he became the president and CEO of Navy Federal Credit Union, the world's largest credit union, where he served for 14 years. Under his leadership, Navy Federal grew from 2 million to 8 million members. Phenomenal. Cutler, welcome and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Shane.
You've had a fascinating career across both military and the private sector. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your professional journey?
Well, I started out at the Naval Academy, where I graduated in 1970, and then, as you mentioned, spent 35 years in the Navy with six actual afloat commands. The first one was when I was 27 years old. I didn't know enough to be scared of anything, and it was probably one of the highlights of my career. And then after I retired after 35 years, I went to work at Navy Federal Credit Union as the CEO, where I spent my next 14 years. I'm currently retired and enjoying life, and it's been a great run for me.
How would you describe your leadership style, and how's that developed over the years?
My style has been quite consistent. I believe, and I've learned this in the Navy, that you have to go to the deck plates to see what is going on. And you have to learn what your people do and how they do it so you can help them to be better at it and more efficient and more productive. It's something that you need to do all the time. I remember I used to tell folks that you don't want to retreat to your cabin. And what I mean by that is the longer you're in a position, the less you think you have to get out and about. But that should be the opposite. You should get out and about more, because people change, situations change, and you've got to figure out a way to get to them and find out what they're doing and what you can do to help them.
We'll talk a little bit more about your book, but I read it, From Sea to the C-Suite. Fantastic read. You talk about the deck plates in that as well. I would encourage everyone to get a copy of this and read some more detail about going to the deck plates. Cutler, who was the most impactful leader in your life, and what quality did you admire about them?
I had numerous while I was in the Navy, but the quality that I enjoyed the most was the leaders that got to know me as an individual, and that they cared about me, and I could tell that they cared about me. And they were not only my leaders, but they were my mentors. And I remember one particular one, Bill Schiffer, when I had my first assignment at the Pentagon. I would go in to see him with my problem of the day, and I knew that he had numerous problems of his own, but he would stop and he would focus on me, and he would make me feel like I was the most important person in his world. And I tried to do that throughout my career. But really, it's about caring for your people.
Cutler, in reading your book, there was a quote you used that you used to inspire those people that work for you. And it really got my attention. And it was you are the captain of your own ship. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what that means and how it was useful to you and the leaders you were developing.
Absolutely. What I mean by captain of your own ship, when you are the captain of a ship, sometimes you're in the middle of the ocean and you don't have anybody to turn to make decisions. You don't have anybody to turn to ask, what should I do now? You have to be the captain of that ship. And I translated that into, let's say, Navy Federal's organization, where I would tell branch managers that I said, you are the captain of the ships of Navy Federal. You're the ones that are facing the members or customers, as others call them, every day. And you have to make decisions without a lot of guidance in some cases and without a lot of time. So be the captain of your own ship. Step up, make decisions, do what you think is right, and you never can go wrong.
I think that is so important. And you have to give your people a little bit of latitude to take some risk as well, because there is risk for them in doing that and risk to your organization.
That's right. And I mentioned that I took command of my first ship with 5 years in the Navy, and I was 27 years old. Well, my boss had 32 years in the Navy, and his guidance to me when I first met him was, Cutler, you do the right thing and I'll back you up all the way. What a wonderful way to spend an assignment with backup and guidance like that.
What great advice. It's clear leadership is a topic you're passionate about. You wrote the book we mentioned before, From C to C-Suite. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yes. When I was at Navy Federal, I would tell sea stories as parables to get my point across. And folks would tell me, Cutler, we like your stories. It gives us a picture of what you're trying to tell us. Now, what else are they going to say? They work for me, but I took it as a compliment, and it was. And my wife encouraged me to write a book, and I needed a co-author to help me. And I found a lady named Taylor Keelan, who was the perfect, perfect co-author. She turned in my stories into wonderful chapters that I'm very proud of.
Where can listeners find a copy?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on the Naval Institute website. And I might add that any proceeds from the book, Navy Federal uses to give to charity.
Fantastic. Cutler, thank you very much. Really enjoyed your time and your lessons in leadership and sharing with us your life story. And I've learned a lot both from talking to you today and reading your book. And thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. And I would like to add one thing, if I could, Shane. During my assignments in Washington, D.C., I gained the utmost respect for the civilians that work here every day. They're hardworking, they're dedicated, and they have my eternal gratitude. I got to come and go from the Pentagon. They stayed every day and worked in Washington when I got to go out and enjoy being at sea.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, WAPA serves civilian federal employees, but your comment is well taken because the interaction between the two is continuous, it's nonstop, and it's critical. So the career civil servants, as well as career military, our country would not be where it is today without them.
I totally agree. And I can tell you from the U.S. Navy standpoint, we couldn't operate like we do without them being the backbone of what we do.
Thank you very much for your time today, Cutler, and to everyone listening to Lessons in Leadership podcast. We'll see you next time.
Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced, from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.